Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Short Term Show. Today we are talking with Tim Grillo, who recently sold his house and is living in his RV, traveling the country, or sort of when he's not working, and based on his income through short-term rentals. Hey Tim, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I am doing awesome. Thank you. So to get started, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into real estate investing, and what your portfolio looks like.
Cool. Yeah, that's you know, like a lot of people, that's kind of a long story. But, you know, I kind of started back actually when I was like 17. I bought my first property when I was 17 years old. I bought it was an old tavern and an old railroad depot side by side. And that turned into my first flip, if you will. I had that for a little while and turned around and sold it for like three times what I paid for it. And then from there, I had kind of a string of, I'll say, very unorganized long-term rentals that I started, you know, when I was in my early 20s and stuff. And I lived up in Iowa at the time. And then, you know, fast forward a bunch of years, I moved to Kentucky, and my wife and I decided to start investing for real. And so we bought a couple long-term rentals. Actually, we just bought one, and then that quickly escalated, and we bought a couple more. And I kind of got a tendency to, as I get into something, I start looking after the fact. So I found Bigger Pockets kind of shortly after we bought our first long-term, and actually learned a lot on Bigger Pockets. And then that kind of turned into us buying a couple more. And then that actually is where we found you and Luke. So kind of through that, we're reading about short-term rentals, and we ran across, we actually were on vacation and decided we might want to buy a long-term or a short-term rental. So we ended up putting an offer in on a condo. And then right after that, we found your podcast and listened to it. And then shortly after that, we got hooked up with you guys and end up with our first cabin. So I guess our portfolio right now, we've got 9 long-term doors and 2 short-term doors. And as you mentioned, we just sold our house actually yesterday. We closed on our house yesterday, and we moved into an RV, and for multiple reasons, one of which is we're taking the money out of our house and going to reinvest it into some more short-term rentals. So we're pretty excited about it.
Awesome. I definitely want to hear all about that. But first, I want to hear about what made you buy a tavern and a railroad depot at 17 years old.
Well, like normal 17-year-olds, I grew up in rural Iowa to begin with. And I was a bit of a, I've been a car junkie my whole life, like since I could walk. I've been an insane car junkie. And so I wanted a garage and stuff, and I was racing trucks off-road and stuff, and I was a little rebellious with my parents, and they were on the verge of kicking me out. So I said, well, I guess I'll go buy something. So I found this these two properties. They're actually two different owners, and they were side by side, and I paid $2,000 a piece for them. So the one, the railroad depot was like falling down. It was from like 1800s. And so I ended up tearing it down. It just became yard. And then the tavern was a good sized building. And I actually converted that into my garage. And then there was a little room in the back where they used to keep all the beer and stuff. And I put a cot back there. And then I had 2 bathrooms. The women's bathroom I turned into my air compressor room for my equipment. And then the men's bathroom I thought was awesome because I now had my own urinal. So then I had that for, I don't know, probably a year. And then I got my, when I got my first real job, I got into an apprenticeship program. That's kind of the way I came up. I didn't go to college or anything. I just went through an apprenticeship program, came up through the trades. And when I did that, I ended up, you know, said it's time to get real and buy a house and move closer to work. So I combined, actually took, there was 2 half-acre properties. So I had an acre total, and I found a guy that wanted the garage, but he wanted more land. So I kind of did my first, you know, split up the land, made the 1 half-acre into 2 quarter-acre lots and combined it with the other one and sold it off. And like I said, made quite a bit of money. And that was my down payment on my first house. So
That is a really interesting story. I've never heard one like that before.
Yeah, it was interesting. And my family joked around about it a lot that, you know, I'd actually got put in the local newspaper that I paid like $1.2 million for this thing. I don't know how that happened. But so everybody joked around that I was going to be some kind of real estate mogul when I was 17. But I kind of let it lay for a while after that. So.
Awesome. Awesome. So fast forward a little bit to your long-term investment. So what strategies did you use, whether it's financing wise or just any strategies at all for obtaining those first few long-term rentals and scaling?
Yeah. So we kind of jumped into it. I'll say uneducated a bit. I'm a bit of a fail fast person. When I get something I want to do, I learn from my mistakes really well. So I tend to just jump into things and go full bore right out of the gate. So anyway, we didn't really know exactly what we're doing getting started. So we started an LLC and we did some just commercial financing through a local bank. So they gave us pretty good terms. They gave us a 15% down terms and stuff. And so our first one, we had scraped up some money and that was our first down payment. And then kind of once we got into it, I started creating systems immediately and started creating my own spreadsheets and how we, rent rolls and tracking and all this stuff. And it was going really well. And we decided to start scaling it. So I actually started scaling it by cleaning out my garage. As I said, I've been a car junkie my whole life. So I had, I've been racing and doing all kinds of car stuff forever. And I've spent ridiculous amounts of money on cars and motorcycles and guns and everything else. So I started selling some stuff. So actually at the second property, our down payment came from selling the used race engine. So you sold on our used race motors and that bought our second duplex. So, and then it just kind of kept going from there. It's kind of the same thing. When we moved in the motorhome, I sold enough stuff out of our house as we're getting ready to sell it to actually pay for the RV cash. So that was cool.
Oh, wow. That is amazing.
Like I said, ridiculous amounts of money on motorcycles and cars. So we had a lot of stuff sitting around that my wife freaked out about. Every time I came upstairs with a wad of cash from meeting somebody selling stuff, she kind of freaked out about how much stuff we have sitting in our basement. So
that is awesome. Fast forward a little bit further to buying your first short term. So how did you identify which market you wanted to buy a short term in? Because there's a lot of options in terms of doing short term rentals. And why didn't you just turn one of your existing long terms into a short term or just buy something else in the town that you live in? Why did you choose the market that you did?
Well, I'll say like a lot of other people, we had the fantasy of, ooh, we're going to buy stuff where we like to go on vacation and all that kind of stuff. So this kind of actually, the short-term thing kind of started on our honeymoon, to be honest. My wife and I went to Tybee Island on accident. We ended up in a short-term rental on the beach and fell in love with it. And it happened to be for sale and didn't know what we were doing at all. This was before we even bought any long-term rentals. So we kind of did our due diligence and made lots of mistakes and did not end up buying it just because we were under the assumption that you had to use property managers and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of stalled us out on it because the numbers didn't make sense with the property management that was in place there. They were taking like 40% and it would have been upside down. So we really wanted to do it. We kept looking at it. Like I said, kind of we're on bigger pockets and read a lot of what you and Luke were doing is before I realized or came across your podcast. So we kind of kept our eyes open and after we'd read a bunch on there, we decided to look in Gulf Shores just because that's where we were on vacation one time and found a place that's for sale by owner. Ended up running the numbers on it. The numbers were fantastic and put an offer in on it. And actually while we were in the middle of that, came across your podcast and kind of quickly realized we'd already made some mistakes again, but went forward with it and it's going pretty good. That property is going pretty good. We've had some issues with it. We got hit with a pretty big assessment right away. That was unknown that we could have known about, but you live and you learn. And then shortly after that, we got hit by Hurricane Sally. So we're kind of, with all that said though, that property is still performing and it's still cash on cash returning above where we expected it to, even with all the stuff going on. So we're happy with it. So in the middle of all that, like I said, we ran across your podcast. So actually about the time we were closing on that, no, we actually had to wait till we were closed on that and then immediately started working with you guys, worked with Julie on getting a cabin. So
You said something interesting that I think a lot of people have questions about when buying beach properties, hurricane. So what did that look like? I mean, I've never had a hurricane. We've been through hurricanes with my beach properties. I've never had any damage. I have on one of my long-terms did get hit by a tornado, and that didn't, I mean, there was some damage and stuff, but it didn't end up being a giant deal. But what was your experience with a hurricane? Because I know Gulf Shores got hit a little harder than the Panhandle.
Yeah, so last year was a little interesting for storms for us. We actually got hit with a tornado at our personal house and tore everything up pretty bad, and then got hurt by the hurricane on the beach, and then got the snowstorm in the Smokies. So it was a few storms right in a row. But to answer the question, the hurricane, it actually tore our place up pretty bad. Our building was on the national news over and over and over. It took off five stories of a wall of the building, and where you could see inside the units, you could actually see beds and dressers and stuff from the street. With that said, our particular unit didn't really get any damage. We had like probably a foot by foot piece of drywall had to get cut out because it got a little wet. That was it. Now, with that said, we did get shut down due to it. The HOA shut the building down. And I saw the biggest lesson learned there is make sure your loss of use insurance is where it should be. We did have loss of use insurance, but we didn't have enough. So it covered us for a while. But our place on the Smokies has much better insurance. And had we had that in place there, we would have been in a lot better shape. So I'd say that's the biggest advice I give is just make sure your insurance is in play and make sure you have a good relationship with the HOA so that you know what to expect going into something like that. So
loss of use insurance for hurricanes. Got it. Yeah. That's a really great piece of advice. So that's a condo. How many bedrooms is it?
That one is it's a one bedroom condo that sleeps six. It's pretty kind of common. It's got bunk beds in the hallway, and then it's got a sleeper sofa. We get a lot of 4 to 6 groups that come in, and they love it. And that particular property, it does really well. So it was closed from September pretty much to January 1 due to the hurricane. We had a couple little spurts there when we were able to rent it. And immediately, every single time we were able to put the listing live back up, we got it booked. And we opened it back up in January, and we had a great January. Had I'd say a really good February considering it's the beach. And then we've got somebody in there for the whole month of March. So we did close it down the last couple weeks of February just because they're putting in new sliding doors and stuff like that. But the property's done well. So
awesome. So switching gears to your place in the Smokies, how big is that property? What are the stats there?
So that property is a 3-2. And I'd say it's a relatively small 3-2. It's like 1,300 square feet. I don't know. You know, a lot of people argue about what you call bedrooms and stuff. It's got two actual bedrooms and then the loft, which has a queen bed and bunk beds up there. So we advertise it as a 3-2 that sleeps eight, and kind of the same deal. We bought it through you guys, I think in October of last year, and it's been fantastic. It's performed above our expectations. And, you know, Julie kept telling us that it's going to do well. We made some beginner mistakes with our listing and stuff, but we've got that sorted out and got the automations all cranking away, and we love it. So we're ready to get some more. We're looking with the money we just got from selling our house. We're going to buy at least two more this year and potentially three.
Awesome. Yeah. Julie's great. She's going to have her own episode, here in a few weeks, but, she's one of the smartest investors that I know. So you're a really good hands working with
Julie. Julie's awesome. We love her. So she helps us out a lot, and we stay in touch, and she's fantastic to deal with.
Yeah, she really is. So if you had it to do over again, there's a lot of people who don't necessarily have both condos and single families. Have you found, other than the hurricane situation, that you have preferred one asset type over the other so far?
Yeah, I'd probably lean towards not a condo if I had the choice. The condo, we love it. Actually, that's my favorite place to go. I love hanging out at the condo. It's awesome. You know, it's beautiful. You know, obviously you're staring at the ocean and the beach is right there. But the HOA is rough. I'd say our HOA is pretty good. We've actually, I'd say start a relationship with people on the board. We've done that. One of our neighbors is on the board that's on right next door. And we become friends with him and his wife. And we got to know the president of the board pretty well. But, you know, they can shut you down anytime. You know, they can, you know, if they want to do something to the building or do this or that, you don't have a whole lot of choice in the matter. You just get a notice saying, you know, no rentals for this period. And if you've got people booked, it's kind of too bad. So, so because of that, I lean more towards non-condos, I'd say, for the business. But it's definitely doable. I wouldn't, you know, if a deal presented itself, I wouldn't turn it down for sure on another condo. But it's not something I target.
Gotcha. So how did you finance these properties, the short term specifically?
Yeah, so the first one, you know, pretty much when we decided to go after real estate hot and heavy, we just kind of went all in and we started. I basically pulled back any money I was putting in my 401k. I reduced it down to just the minimum amount needed to get the match through my company. And then the rest of it, I started putting into a fund. So we literally just saved money. And then I mentioned selling stuff. I actually sold, you know, the one long term I stole, I bought by buying or selling one of my used race engines. I actually sold my race car to buy the first short term. So it was a combination of the selling the race car and then the money we had saved up. And then the second one, we actually did a 401k withdrawal under the COVID rules. We qualified. We had some situations with COVID that made us qualify for being able to pull out some money out of our 401k without the penalties. So we did that on the second one. And then between the profits we've made off of everything and the money we've been saving up and the proceeds from our house is what's going to lead us to number 3, 4, and 5.
That's amazing. So were you doing commercial financing or conventional financing on these?
Yeah. So the first ones, the long terms, like I said, we did commercial. We learned a lot since then, and now we're doing conventional. Just, you know, we're not doing the short terms through the LLC. We're doing that just conventionally. And we like it a lot better. You know, the numbers are obviously better, and it's, you know, strategically on the short terms, it works out better.
I agree with that. We do commercial on our long terms. And if right now I've got a couple conventionals left that I'm about to use while interest rates are low and cash is still worth something. I'd like to throw that into a few more things before that changes with inflation and everything.
The commercial loans were good. We kind of had a strategy with our long terms of going after some kind of, I'll say, quasi rural stuff. We don't live in a big town. We're actually in Bowling Green, Kentucky. It's not a big town, but we targeted smaller towns that surround Bowling Green, and we're about an hour north of Nashville. So we get a lot of, you know, people that commute down to Nashville and down, or there's just a lot of commerce in that area. So we found in the rural stuff that we got really, really, really good tenants that wanted to live there. They specifically did not want to live in the bigger town. And most of the land that, you know, I operate a lot of stuff what we do off of the 3 C's. Look at, you know, understand who our customers are, understand who your competitors are, and understand how to create value. I live by that. And in the competitor area and the rural stuff, we just found that the landlords were very old school and they didn't take care of the properties and stuff was rough. So we went in and bought some stuff and just made it nice. You know, it's not real fancy or anything, but it's really nice and they're nice places to live and our tenants are fantastic. And along with that, the rural banks have been great to deal with. You know, they're people you can walk in and talk to and form relationships with them. And, you know, I go out to lunch with them and hang out with them and stuff like that. And so getting money, once you've established that, became very easy. So
that's awesome. With commercial financing, you really do kind of have to find that local bank and make that relationship, make a lasting relationship with people. We've found that with the most recent few long terms, we moved into a new market in Alabama for long terms because we were investing in Chattanooga and just the deals have dried up there. Not that I wouldn't continue to buy there if one presented itself, but it's just gotten really difficult. But it takes a while to find the right bank and create the right relationship to create a repeatable process for buying property. So that's really important. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Agreed. And it's kind of the same on short term too. You know, we use your people for that. And they're fantastic. And actually I've got an appointment this afternoon with your people to get ready for number three. So.
It's good to have the right people for sure. So I think what most of the listeners have been waiting for me to ask you more in more detail about is what led you to the decision to move into the RV? I want to hear all about that.
Yeah, so that I actually contemplating doing this from the RV. Luke texted me first thing this morning and said, "Dude, do the interview from the RV." Unfortunately, I had to go to work. So the RV thing, it's a lot of things. There's one. My wife, she's like a total badass minimalist, and she had a dream of living in a tiny house. So that definitely drove it. And then. Also, just us with what we're doing, we love to travel. My family's in Iowa. Her family's in Texas. We actually met in Nashville at a bar. So it's kind of a weird circumstance how we even became us, but it's been awesome. So we just kind of looking at what we have and looking at what our priorities are. You know, we're both very much like we love to help people and we like to, experiences are way more important to us than stuff. So we just kind of took the plunge and decided, we talked about it for almost a year. Actually, we were getting ready to do this a year ago. And then we got hit by that tornado and our place got tore up and then COVID hit. So we just kind of pushed pause on it all for a year and got everything fixed up and ready to go. But we just decided to give it a shot. And we're like, what's the worst thing that can happen? I mean, if it sucks and we hate it, we'll just go buy another small house somewhere. But so far, I mean, we're only a weekend, so you can call it honeymoon phase or whatever. But so far, it's great. We live in a small space. Our cost of living is very small. We aren't tied to anything. We have freedom to go do whatever we want. If we want to go, drive across the country, we can do that. And it's been great. We did a couple test runs. We took it up north for Thanksgiving and took it to Texas for Christmas. So we got to spend some time in it before we actually moved into it. So, but we're excited about it. Long term, we don't know when we may, make any kind of transitions from working our W-2 jobs. But at some point, we'd like to get into, again, something helping people. We've talked about doing disaster relief and doing some other things where we can take the skills that we've gained over the years and just kind of give back. So.
Well, that's really cool. That's a really cool idea. So you guys are doing this with children, correct? You guys have a couple kids or one kid living with you?
No, kind of. I have two kids that they live with their mom, who lives a couple miles away. So they come over pretty much every night and hang out and have dinner with us, and they do sleep with us from time to time. But they don't live with us full time. They live with their mom full time. So, but yeah, they're over there almost. They were there last night and hanging out eating dinner. So we sit around and hang out, and they go on vacations with us and all that. So,
do they love the RV? Our kids love the RV.
They do. It took a minute for my oldest. I think he loved it until we said we were moving into it. And then he got a little embarrassed. And that's another thing. I want my kids to see that, you don't have to live life by the rules that society puts out there. You can do whatever you want and change up however you want to live and you can just do whatever you want. And I want my kids to see that. They don't have to live in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, the white picket fence, and have 2.3 kids. You can just kind of, lead your own path. So anyway, it took a minute. My youngest son, he was like excited through the moon about it and he loves it. My oldest son, once he saw where we are parked right now, he has now come around to it and now he thinks it's cool. But as we talk about it, he hated it. He didn't want to tell any of his friends and everything else. His dad and stepmom are going to live in a van by the river, basically. I think it was on his head. So.
Yeah. Ours aren't old enough to be embarrassed by us yet, but I know that's
awesome. That's the best. I've got a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old. There's nothing better than them being embarrassed.
So you are planning on getting 2 or 3 more this year. Are you going to stick to your same markets or look elsewhere, or what are your plans there?
Yeah, I could tell you we're going to stick with short-term shop.
Thank you.
For sure. We would like to stay in the Smokies. you know, as everybody knows, everything's very competitive right now. So I'm jumping back into the obsessive looking at stuff every day. But we're also going to look at other stuff as well. You know, you guys are expanding into other markets, and we're going to look where you guys are. So we're open to anything. Obviously, you know, there's some benefits to having things in multiple markets when it comes to financing. So we'll probably take advantage of that for sure. Mm-hmm. But we definitely want to get, my wife and I have slightly different views on this. We're pretty aligned. I want something on top of the mountain, like hanging out on a cliff. And she's not so much for that, but that gets into personal stuff, and you know, you're not really supposed to mix that. But that's just something I want. But so anyway, we're probably going to get at least two more in the Smokies, and then from there we'll probably branch out, or we may branch out in the middle of it, just kind of whatever presents itself.
Gotcha. So when you're looking at these properties, whichever market they happen to be in, what constitutes a good deal for you? Like, what makes you say, okay, this is something that I'm interested in buying?
Yeah, for us, I mean, especially on the short term, it really comes down to cash flow and cash on cash return. We're looking to get some freedom and independence out of this. So that's really what we look at. You know, I do a pretty, you know, when I was doing, when I got into, I'm a bit of a spreadsheet nerd. So when I got into doing the long terms, I created a pretty elaborate analysis spreadsheet, and we use that tool still on the short terms, but we look at it a little bit different on the short terms. So.
Gotcha. So we are getting towards the end of the podcast here. I just have a few more questions for you. So what do you see? Because you're in our Facebook group and you see a lot of the questions going around, and you know, everybody's in a lot of Facebook groups, I think, for real estate investing and short-term rentals specifically. What is something that you see a lot of new investors get tripped up on when it comes to short-term rentals?
Fear, you know, I mean, it's almost anything with investing. Before I answer that completely, I'm going to, you know, step and say, you know, one of the things that really drew me to this group is the people helping people thing. I mean, I think anytime people are sharing their time, talent, and treasure and helping each other out is awesome. And you and Luke have really just grabbed that concept and ran with it. And it's created an amazing group that feels like family. So it's cool. In regards to what people are fearful for, it's everything. It's kind of a lot of the same stuff that's people are fearful of with long-term rentals. You know, everybody's scared of the clogged toilet and the furnace going bad and the roof leaking, all that kind of stuff. And then also, I've seen a little bit of everything. People are scared of hurricanes. People are scared of fire. People are scared of snow. I mean, it's all just stuff that happens. And in my opinion, you just got to kind of learn to deal with it, or go put your money in the stock market and let somebody else deal with the problems. So
you're right. It is all just stuff that happens. It's not if, it's when.
Yeah.
And you can deal with it and reap the benefits, or you can be scared to do it and never do it.
So. Yeah. My wife and I, you know, on our first one, like I said, we took a little bit to make the jump, and then, you know, I'm a kind of person where I can only learn so much by reading and research. And that's, it's only like this much, it's very little. I got to learn by doing it. I got to engulf myself in it. So we just said, screw it, and made the jump and like bought something. And you immediately, like day one, you start learning it. For me, I just learned very fast that way. For me, you just got to get over the fear and just don't worry about it. When you look around, it's not too hard to look around at anybody doing real estate, and you can always see somebody and go, I think I'm as smart as that person. I should be able to figure this out, you know? And that's kind of held to be true, you know? So.
Yeah, I agree. We did the same thing when we started. We didn't have any mentorship or any education, really. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't even know it was called real estate investing when we bought our first property. So we
were a landlord.
Exactly. We were like, we're going to buy a rental property. But I really think that is the best way to do anything, is just you learn by doing it. And you can research and talk to as many people as possible and make as many spreadsheets as you can possibly make, but the only real way to learn is to do it.
Yeah. And I'm a big believer in, you know, like I said, learning from mistakes, learning from data. You know, I mean, you can, like you said, you can analyze forever, but until you get the opportunity to look at your own mistake and make it better, you might learn something and be better than the next person, or then you can share that. And then they may, you know, it just kind of, that whole helping people thing just keeps evolving. Cause as you learn something and you get this much better, and it just keeps stepping up as, cause then you're going to share that with somebody else, and then they're going to take what you learned and make it even better yet and share it back or share it with somebody else. And it's really cool. And that's what I love about this community. You know, it's just everybody getting involved with each other.
Well, awesome. Awesome. I'm glad to hear that you've found some value in it. So switching gears, if you knew when you were 17, what you know now, when you first started investing in real estate, what advice would you give yourself at 17? What would you do differently?
Don't buy so many cars and guns. Spend the money and invest some of that money. I literally, you know, when I was in construction, I was in construction for 16 years. And I literally would get off work every day and go to my buddy's house, and we'd drink beers and we'd sit there and talk about cars, guns, and motorcycles. And it always turned into, you know, my buddy owned a concrete company and I ran a pretty good sized construction company. So we were making, you know, for being a couple 20-year-olds, we were making good money. And it turned into just a free for all of buying stuff. And the one summer, I'm pretty sure I bought 7 motorcycles, a couple cars, and probably 15, 20 guns, you know, and we were both doing that, you know, both of him and I were just like, bam, 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 bam. So my 17-year-old self, I would say, set, you know, go have fun, but start taking a percentage of your money and start investing it. And buying, you know, I had properties, and I'd kill to have some of the properties back that I sold. You know, when I was in Iowa, I had a couple properties that I look back at them and I'd just be crushing it right now if I would have kept them. And I didn't know any better. And I sold them to go buy the next thing. So I wish I had some of that stuff back, but we're starting over and it's good.
You know, I've never heard anyone say, I wish I hadn't bought that, but I have heard quite a few people say, I wish I hadn't sold that.
Yeah. The like I said, I had a couple killer properties that I sold that were just, they'd be just rental machines right now. And the one, I mean, my first house I bought, it's just this little 700 square foot house, and I paid nothing for it. And at the time I was 18, so I thought it was a lot of money. And I lived in it. Actually, the whole time I had it, I never made a payment. I owned that house for 7 or 8 years. And immediately when I moved in, I got a roommate, and the roommate paid my payment. He actually paid more than what my payment was. And then, I was getting ready to move out of it, and I was getting ready to sell it. And another buddy of mine who's living in an apartment asked to rent it. And he told me he was paying for his apartment, and it was like 3 times what my payment was. And he offered that for my house because they had a garage. I'm like, yeah, I'll take that. So then he was only going to live there for like 6 months, and then he ended up living there for like 3 years. And then towards the end of that, he offered to buy it. So then he bought the property for, you know, what it was worth at the time, which was a lot more than I paid for it. And that should have been a 2x4 in my head to say, hey, maybe there's something here. But I kind of, you know, again, cars, motorcycles, and guns took precedence. So I wasn't too focused on real estate and long-term investing. But if I could go back and look at some stuff, I'd be paying attention to some of that. So.
Gotcha. Well, along those same lines, what advice would you give to a new investor, maybe one who hasn't spent all their money on cars, motorcycles, and guns, and who's looking to get started in the short-term rental space? What advice would you give a newbie?
So would sell everything, buy a motorhome, and use the money to start investing count?
I mean, yeah, that's great advice.
I mean, that's what we're doing now, and we're having a ball. But truly, the biggest advice is don't be scared. And ask yourself, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You know, if you end up going broke, and that's the worst thing, nobody's taking your birthday away. You know, I mean, you're going to be all right. And learn from your mistakes, jump in, do what you can, you know, analyze things, but don't overanalyze them. You just got to go at some point. And, if you get some money scraped together to buy your first place, do it. You know, I mean, the worst thing you're gonna do is either go broke or sell it. I mean, and then you start over, who cares, you know? So, but that's likely not gonna happen. If you put time and effort and research and learn from your mistakes, like focus on, one of my big things that I do is I turn problems into processes. I keep a running PowerPoint document of when we have problems with our properties. My wife and I talk through and like, what are we gonna do? And this sucks. And oh my gosh, we're stressing out. But after the end, we decide like this is what we're going to do to handle that situation, and we put it in the PowerPoint. So we have this whole PowerPoint of problems that we turn into processes. And once you've solved the problem once, you stick to that. And then when you move forward, you don't have, you know, it just becomes less and less problems that you run into because you've already fixed it once. So why would you reinvent the wheel every single time?
Yeah, learning from your own mistakes and creating processes around it, that sounds like such simple advice, but some people really just cannot wrap their head around that. And then the motorhome thing.
Writing it down has been key for us. Putting it in that PowerPoint, you know, put it in what, I don't care, write on a piece of paper, whatever, but writing it down, especially like, you know, I mean, you guys are a husband wife partnership, as my wife and I are, and everybody handles that a little different. But for us, it just makes it a lot easier for, like, it keeps the emotions out of it. You know, it's like, okay, we already talked about this. Here it is. Bam. You know, we don't spend any more time on it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. People ask me about that a lot. Like, how do you guys handle it as a husband and wife team? But I really don't have any answers for that because it was never a situation where it was one of us trying to convince the other one that this is a good idea. We've always been really on the same page about real estate investing and what we're going to buy and how we're going to go about it. So I just do not have any advice on how to make that work because it's always just kind of worked for us.
Yeah, same here. My wife's actually, I'll say she's been in real estate most of her career. She's a paralegal and she does real estate legal work. So she does all the closing work for people. So she works for a title company. So she's been on that side of it like her whole career. So she knows a lot of stuff, but she had never really been involved in investing. So when we jumped, she knew, she had no qualms at all about getting into it. And actually she's awesome at it. She's the people person in our group. She's the one that talks to people and butters people up and is real nice and makes our guests feel like, you know, they're loved. So.
Absolutely. And back to the motorhome thing. So I know some people probably heard that and thought, oh my gosh, that's unattainable. I can't buy a motorhome. But I would like to say we bought one a few months ago and the payment on it is less, but not much less, but it is less than the payment on our Expedition Max. So the suburban size Expedition, the payment on a new motorhome. And we were trying to buy a used one. We just weren't finding anything. Payment on a new one, which is, you know, not the most expensive one you can possibly get, but one that does exactly what we needed to do, is less than one of our car payments. So it's totally, totally doable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we started looking into it and, you know, you mentioned new ones and the financing is awesome on them. You can finance them kind of like a house. So like you said, the payments are very, very small, you know, compared to anything. We went a different route and we did buy a used one and we bought a big diesel pusher thing. And you know, the depreciation on them is huge. So we bought a used one and you can buy them for a fraction of what they cost now. So we love it. I mean, I love driving it. every time I drive it, I'm, you know, up there with the semis and it's awesome.
My husband loves that too.
Yeah.
We talk about it. Oh yeah. He gets his things and he gets his little buddies that he is like on text with all the time about whatever thing he's on right now, right now is the RVs.
Yeah. Yeah. We text about RVs and guns and cars. So I told him the other day that I may need to start avoiding them because it's become a bad influence in my life.
When it comes to buying stuff, he likes to buy things. Okay. So moving on to the very last question of the podcast, what is your favorite book and how has that impacted you?
Yeah, so that's a little bit of a tough one for me. I love to read. I love, you know, mostly nonfictional stuff. So I don't really have a favorite. I read a lot and read a lot of books, but I'll say the one that, you know, this is a pretty common one that kind of was a 2x4 in my head is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You know, I think everybody's read that, that's doing this stuff. And that did create a shift in the way I think. And then that led to a lot more books around real estate and finances and business and stuff like that. So it was just kind of the catalyst book, I'd say, for that kind of a shift. So.
Awesome. Rich Dad is always a great recommendation. And I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have read that. If you have not, you really, really need to. And then I would also even add to that and say, follow it up with Cashflow Quadrant, also by Robert Kiyosaki. You read that one?
Agreed. Yep. Read that. I've been diving lately into, you know, the profit first stuff. I actually did mm-hmm. class yesterday and actually set up all my Relay accounts this morning. So
that bank has been awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. So it was funny, normal Luke, but you know, he's like, oh, just send him an email with my name in it and they'll let you in. No big deal. And sure as shit, I got locked in a part of the application process and I just sent him a thing. Said, Luke Carl said, let me in. And they freaking opened the gates up. So here we come.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Tim, for joining us. And absolutely. I think there's absolutely. A lot of great stuff that you said, for a lot of things for people to think about. And thank you so much for coming. And we will talk to you soon.
Sounds great, Avery. Have a great day.
Thanks
for everything you guys do.